When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show European Edition. Today, basking in glory with Bilbao bagging surprise Super Cup success over Barcelona. Also, Serie A with derbies galore, Milan wheeling and dealing, and Napoli the elating Fiorentina. Ligue 1, a good week for plucky PSG, and Bundesliga with Bayern extending their lead and a top four contender you weren't expecting unless you're much, much cleverer than us. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Wow, lovely sounds there of one of the stories of the weekend, and perhaps the season, as here Villalibre playing his trumpet, getting his horn at the end of the phenomenal Super Cup success of Athletic Club de Bilbao over Barcelona. Woo! We're joined by celebrity Athletic Club fan Alvaro Romeo. Hi, Alvaro.
Hello, hello, hello. Villalibre, what a man, what a musician, what a footballer. Excellent. New Athletic de Bilbao legend.
Indeed, indeed. Also with us today, James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
He's celebrating as well, listener. It's literally his birthday.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Right. That's Julien Laurens, and so far silent, but biding his time to lay something really big on us, Raphael Honigstein.
I did make a very excited noise, but maybe it got lost in the Jules exclamation.
Well, plenty of room for more excited noises as we chronicle the events of this weekend around the continent. Let's start off with a quick round of Moments of the Weekend by Paddy Power. Rafa, you go first.
Well, Moment of the Week, James, Luka Jovic, back from Real Madrid, on loan. He's on the pitch for a few minutes, four touches. The fourth one is already a goal. Wonderful volley. He scored a second one to make it two. That's as many as he scored in 18 months in Madrid.
Wow. Jules, what about you?
It has to be Marseille losing at home against Nîmes, bottom of the table, who could hardly beat your pub team. And yet they go to the Velodrome, they win. On the back of that, there was a big protest from the fans against the president before the game. After the game, the president coming to the dressing room and the training ground and roasting the players. And then looking at the stats of Dimitri Payet as well, who in the 60 minutes that he spent on the pitch in that game, made five sprints. So I would just leave you with that thought.
James, what about in Serie A? Pick something.
Well, you've got to pick one of the two derbies, I suppose. The Rome derby on Friday night, the Derby d'Italia on Sunday. I think the Derby d'Italia was more momentous in that it feels like, even though we're not halfway through the season yet, there's still a long way to go, that Juventus's era as the preeminent force in Italian football over the last 9 years is coming to a close, because Inter beat them 2-0. They were very convincing as well. And Nicolò Barella once again confirming that he is the best Italian midfield player out there.
Ha! James Horncastle has spoken. Very good. Alvaro Romeo, you finish off.
It has to be Athletic Club Bilbao winning their second title in 37 years after beating Barcelona in the Super Cup final with a goal of Iñaki Williams in the extra time. A beautiful goal to round up an excellent week for Athletic de Bilbao, because not only they beat Barcelona, but they also eliminated Real Madrid in the semi-finals.
That's quite a story, and I think that's where we have to start today's Totally Football Show European Edition.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
All right, so Alvaro, a little bit of background. Spanish Super Cup, which they take seriously in Spain, do they?
Yes, I think so. And okay, especially the winner takes it very seriously. Right, the winner takes a lot of credit from it. And yeah, this new format, which is really brand new because it started last year, is proving to be quite nice. And I think that it also, since it is framed in the middle of January, it creates turning points of the season for whoever plays it. Last season, Real Madrid took plenty of positives from it and win the league title. And right, this year, I think that this is quite a blow for Barcelona, losing a final. And this can be also a really good starting point for Athletic Club Bilbao, with a new manager, a new title, and having beaten Real Madrid and Barcelona in the last 72 hours.
Right, so it's almost like winning a League Cup would be for a Premier League side. Well, Spanish Super Cup, now a four-team affair. So what, top two from the league and the two cup finalists. So it was Barcelona and Real Madrid and two Basque sides, Real Sociedad and Athletic Club, that were in the mix. And Barcelona and Real, of course, had to be kept separate in the semi-finals. So on Thursday, Barcelona got past Real Sociedad, but only on penalties, while Athletic Club de Bilbao beat Real Madrid 2-1 to set up Sunday's clash with the Catalans. How optimistic were you of Athletic's chances going into this game, Alvaro?
Moderately. You know, Barcelona has beaten Athletic Club Bilbao in many finals since 2009, one single game finals as well. So this time, this Barcelona is not as convincing as it was in 2009, let alone 2012 or 2015. So I think that Athletic Club Bilbao had a chance, but I was very surprised about the positive way they played. I mean, Athletic Club Bilbao recently, under the previous manager, they were solid, but they played some what you would brand as negative football. And this time they went for it, and the pressure they did on Barcelona in the first half was quite good. Despite that, Barcelona managed to score a goal thanks to Antoine Griezmann. It was Lionel Messi, more or less, who created that with a good play with Jordi Alba. Right before the halftime, Oscar de Marcos drew the game for Athletic Club Bilbao. Then Antoine Griezmann in the second half, he scored the second goal for Barcelona again. After scoring the second goal, Barcelona didn't have the hunger to go for the third. In fact, they were asking pretty much, or they were begging for the game to be over, because they didn't have any steam or anything left in their legs. Athletic Club Bilbao scored the equalizer pretty much nearing the 90th minute. And from that point onwards, you could see that Athletic Club believed and Barcelona didn't. I think that it was quite illustrative, the pre-extra time talk that Athletic Club Bilbao had with the manager and the players all together. And Barcelona didn't seem as convincing. It looked like there was not such a spirit in Barcelona players in the chat they had with Ronald Koeman. And that translates to the extra time. I think that Athletic Club came stronger after the 90th minute. Iñaki Williams, a player who normally is regarded as a very good attacking weapon, but not the most accurate when it comes to the finishing. He scored the super goal. Beautiful, fantastic goal. Ter Stegen could do anything. He put the ball basically in the top right corner from a very acute angle. And he scored that goal that gave Athletic Bilbao the victory.
No, no están fuera de juego. Dentro del área le puede pegar Williams. ¡Bacalao! ¡Bacalao, bacalao, 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 bacalao!
Barcelona not only lost the game, but they lost Lionel Messi for the next games, because in the 117th minute, I think, he basically had a little brawl with Asier Villalibre when he was trying to run into the box, and he put Villalibre on the floor. Now it's down to the Spanish FA to decide whether that was just violent conduct or it was an assault on Villalibre. If it is the latter, Lionel Messi will miss the next four games. If it is only regarded as violent conduct, he will miss two games.
Wow. The first red card he's ever picked up for Barcelona.
And surely, Alvaro, the fact that he never had another red card could mean that they'd be nicer, kind of nicer to him in the sanction, or you don't think that would change anything? And it was hardly Conor McGregor, really. I don't even think he makes proper contact when he tries to punch Villalibre.
Yeah, I think that he, luckily for him, I think that this is going to be regarded as violent conduct and not an assault or an aggression, which is, the nuance is very important, because if you assault an opponent, you can face up to 4 games. And I think that maybe the past Lionel Messi has had in La Liga, his record is pretty much impeccable, could help a little bit, because there hasn't been a repetition of bad conduct, obviously. But I think that this time, irrespective of his past, he was going to get probably 2 games. So, yeah, this is going to be the punishment for Messi. So he's going to miss the next game against Cornella in the Spanish Cup, which probably he would have rested anyway. And then the next league game. So, yeah, I mean, all things considered, I think that 2 games is kind of fair. But we have to say as well that Athletic Club Bilbao, and this is my club, but I have to admit it, in the last 20 minutes of the game, they took advantage of just grabbing the opponent's t-shirts all the time. And there is obviously here like some sort of help that the football rule gives you, because that is never punished with a red card, but with a yellow. And many Athletic Club Bilbao players were basically stopping Frenkie de Jong or Lionel Messi from running, from dribbling past, and that obviously influenced Barcelona badly, to the point that Lionel Messi at some point got very frustrated.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the fellow who was caught by Messi's flailing arms, Asier Villalibre, the gentleman who, of course, had equalised to take it into extra time, and who then capped off the night, rounded off the celebrations by bringing out his trumpet for the celebrations. He's got quite a musical background, Villalibre.
Yes, he does. He does. Well, you should know that, you know, this squad of Athletic Bilbao has a few guys who are interested in more things than only football. For example, 6 members of the squad, they started a music band about a couple of years ago called Orsay, which is the way that we said offside in Spain in the past when people didn't speak English in the country. So the band is called like this, Orsay. And I don't know if they are rehearsing now, because obviously the COVID restrictions probably don't let them gather indoors. But Dani García, Villalibre, the trumpet player and the singer as well, the lead singer, Valenciaga, De Marcos, Vesga, Leque, they all admitted that after they retire, they would like to give it a go to music and try to be on the road, traveling around, playing music, and let's see how far they take this, but it seems that they are taking it for seriously. And Villalibre is an excellent footballer. I mean, he comes from the academy, he went on loan, that didn't succeed for him, but in the youth ranks, he basically hit great numbers, and I think that little by little this season he's becoming one of the important players, which is fundamental for Athletic Club Bilbao, because last season, midway through, Aduriz said that he retired at the age of 39 because his hip was basically not letting him even walk a little bit without feeling any pain. So it's very important for Athletic Club that they have managed to bring someone up from the academy to the first team, and this guy is making it. He's a good player, and I do believe that he's going to be Athletic Bilbao's number 9 for the next years to come.
Right. He's a local lad, I imagine. Is he Villalibre?
Yes, and well, you have to listen to him speaking in Spanish. It's very funny, because I think that he probably has learned Basque before Spanish language, so he speaks Spanish with a really, really, really strong Basque accent. And well, he reminds me a little bit of some part of my family that suffer from that, or they are benefited from that, the fact that they learned Basque before Spanish. So he sounds very cute in Spanish, yes.
Right. Are Athletic Club still rigorously only Basque players then?
Yes, but if, for example, a player like Ganea, who was Romanian-born, who was in the squad last year, or Kodro, who is the son of Meho Kodro, former Bosnian striker, if those players have played for Athletic de Bilbao lately, also Aymeric Laporte, who was born in France, and definitely not in the Basque country we consider the Basque-French area, but if those players, they spend a few years in the academy, or if they spend a few years playing in the Basque system when they are young, they can be capped for Athletic Club Bilbao. So, for example, let me give you a very quick example. My son, for example, Ander, was born in London. And I don't think that at the minute he could play for Athletic Club Bilbao. But if he plays for Athletic Club Bilbao in the academy, or if he plays for any Basque team in the youth system anytime soon, then he will be eligible. And a couple of years ago, there was a case of a German girl. Her parents were Basque, and basically she spent all her summers in her youth in the Basque country, but she never played for any Basque team in the youth system. So Athletic Club Bilbao tried to sign her, and the former president and the board basically stopped that signing from happening, because she basically, despite her parents being Basque, she didn't meet a couple of requirements that seem to be mandatory. But at the same time, I think that if the club does very well or very bad in the future, maybe, you know, they kind of squeeze the philosophy differently in order to get the best out of it. So who knows?
Who knows? As it stands, anyway, even with being a local club for local people, they are the team with the third most trophies in all of Spanish football, behind Barcelona and Real Madrid. A long way behind, to be fair, the big two. But Barcelona have 95 and Real Madrid 94. And Athletic, with this, are now on title or trophy number 35 of their history. But they could make that 36 or even 37 this very season, couldn't they, Álvaro?
Yes, I mean, they just have to beat Real Sociedad in the cup final in April, which a final that should have been played last year. But the club and the players, and Real Sociedad and Athletic Club, send a request to the Spanish FA asking them to play the final only if fans will be allowed in. Well, I think that this season the situation is completely different. You cannot postpone that final much more. And if it has to be played behind closed doors, so it will. But I think that what you are saying about the titles that Athletic Bilbao has won and all that shouldn't make us forget that this club has been still competitive even after the Bosman ruling, which is something that at the time, circa 1995, I remember that there was this prediction by some saying that maybe with the Bosman ruling, Athletic Club Bilbao's philosophy couldn't stand. And since then, it's true that Athletic hasn't won many trophies, only two Super Cups, yes. But at the same time, do you know how many big clubs have been relegated since 1995? All of them, basically. All of them but Valencia, Barcelona and Real Madrid. But Sevilla, Atlético, Betis, Zaragoza, Real Sociedad, all those clubs, they have been relegated in the last 25 years. So there is something that Athletic Bilbao has been doing really well lately. That has to be said as well. And in the last decade, they qualified for the Champions League once, multiple times for the Europa League. They played few finals. So this is a good time for Athletic Club Bilbao. And I believe that they understood that the key to success is probably signing the best possible manager. They did it with Jupp Heynckes in the past. They did it with Marcelo Bielsa, with Ernesto Valverde. And I think that Marcelino is one of those top managers that Athletic de Bilbao can benefit from. Because if you cannot sign the best players, at least go for the best managers.
Fair enough. He's certainly off to a brilliant start. We'll hear more from Spain later on, including Barcelona's prospects against the team that knocked out Atletico Madrid in the previous round in the Copa del Rey this Thursday, a little bit later on, because up next, we're heading off to Italy.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
James, big results this weekend in Italy. Lazio's huge win in the derby. Napoli's even huger win over Fiorentina. And Sunday night at San Siro, Inter doing Juve 2-0. Where do you want to start?
I think it's got to be the Derby d'Italia, because that has the greatest repercussions. You know, Antonio Conte, who was brought in by Inter to essentially take down the Juventus side that he built. He captained as a player and then coached to the beginnings of this sort of dominant cycle that they've been on over the last 9 years. Lost both of these games last year, and I think deservedly so. But this time around, I think there can be no doubt who's the better team, who was the better coach. It was Conte's Inter, Arturo Vidal coming back to haunt his old team as well. I thought it was quite funny watching sort of Vidal's hijinks before and after the game. He sort of in the warm-ups was going over to cuddle Giorgio Chiellini and seemed to be kissing the Juventus badge, which he had to later then come out and basically say, no, I wasn't doing that. And then at the end of the game, he went over to Andrea Pirlo, who I think just wanted to walk down the tunnel undisturbed. And Vidal was sort of trying to have a laugh with him. And he was like, this has probably been one of the most damaging nights of my short coaching career. As Pirlo, the pupil, was kind of completely schooled by his master Conte.
Is that what it was then? Do you think it was a victory for Conte's tactics rather than, say, Barella running midfield or any of those other things?
I think it was a combination of the two. I think Conte said afterwards that they'd been working on a few things in training, which they thought were kind of weaknesses in the Juventus setup, and he was pleased to see his players put what they had done in practice on the training ground into a live action game. You know, I think if you look at, for example, the second goal, you can praise Bastoni's pass. You can criticise Juventus' defensive setup, but I think that's something that Conte had seen in the video analysis that they've been doing. That if you can kind of escape the press with some clever movement, then all it takes is one pass to get through this Juventus team, and we've seen it time and again against Fiorentina, against Udinese, against Roma earlier in the season when Pirlo and Juventus were lucky to come away with a point, having been down to 10 men for half an hour. But yeah, that right-hand side of Inter's caused all kinds of problems for Juventus, either with, you know, sort of Skriniar accompanying Barella and Hakimi up against Frabotta and Aaron Ramsey. It was a really torrid time for them. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right to name-check Barella, James, because he was the one cropping up on the right with those crosses for Vidal. I thought his mentality, his attitude throughout, you saw how frustrated he was when Lukaku and Lautaro didn't take other chances that he had a hand in setting up. Just the kind of player you want by your side on a big occasion like that. And someone, I think, in the last 18 months, a little bit like Lukaku, at least in other games, someone who's really emerged as a leader in this team under Conte. So, yeah, temporarily they went top. Obviously, Milan played Cagliari on Monday night. Another decimated Milan side without Calhanoglu, Theo Hernandez, who I think tested positive for COVID. So it looks more and more like the Scudetto will be moving away from Turin and back to Milan for the first time in close to a decade.
Milan still to play, and with one or two important moves coming up in the next few days in terms of transfers, James.
Yeah, they've been the busiest of all teams, I think. Certainly at the top in Serie A. Some of the teams that are fighting relegation are just as active, but Milan have done the most business early. They brought in Mete from Torino, at least on loan, to bolster the midfield, which has missed Bennacer, I think, in recent weeks. Tonali has struggled for the most part, hasn't been able to really adapt to playing in a two. Next to Kessie. They've signed Mario Mandzukic, who touched down on Sunday. Mandzukic, who kind of makes Milan's front line when everyone's fit, just a front line of hard men, Zlatan and Mario. I wouldn't really want to go up against either of them, although I don't think we'll be seeing them playing together. I think it'll be one or the other up front for them. And then it looks like Fikayo Tomori, centre-back from Chelsea, will arrive this week. I was told by Milan last night that they were pretty confident of landing him. But I think what's kind of quite interesting is the three of them, I mean, aside from maybe Tomori, two of them are older guys. I mean, okay, Mete's sort of 26, 27. Mandzukic is in his 30s. It's kind of a little bit gone away from what they were doing in the transfer market over the last year or so, where for the most part they've gone young apart from Ibrahimovic and Kjær. I think they missed out on some of the targets that they really wanted in January, but they've filled these spots on the roster all the same, which, you know, should allow them to sustain what they've already done so far this season and keep this title challenge going all the way to May.
The two Milanese sides occupying the top two spots for the moment. In third place now, meanwhile, are Napoli after their 6-0 victory at the weekend over Fiorentina. Whose assist was better, do you think, Insigne this weekend? Bastoni or Insigne? Bastoni with that, what, 70-yard ball to set up Barella for Inter's second, or Insigne for Napoli's third?
Well, I suppose one way of looking at it is that you wouldn't expect a centre-back to play that kind of scything pass, the one that Bastoni played to put Barella through. Insigne, this was magnificent. You know, it was also highlighted by Cesare Prandelli as the reason why his team lost, because there are five Fiorentina players around Insigne. When he sort of takes them on, then he turns around, goes back again, and then takes them on again, and then plays this wonderful pass to the far post for Chucky Lozano.
Guadagna il pallone, va via a Milenkovic e ad Amrabat. Ancora lui prosegue da solo, scatenato Lorenzo, il diagonale grande. Per Lozano.
Grande
goal,
Lorenzo!
Goal! Grande Insigne, grande Lozano che però si fa male.
I think in terms of artistry, it's probably got to be Insigne's. No, I think that was just a more prolonged individual effort than Bastoni's. But really interesting game, this one between Napoli and Fiorentina, because David Ospina made a good save from Ribéry in the first half. Fiorentina hit the bar. Koulibaly made a goal line clearance as well. And, you know, if you kind of look at the goals that Napoli scored, they're all special goals for the most part. Now, you know, I think Napoli thoroughly deserve the win, but, you know, if you look at kind of XG, it's quite strange because Fiorentina and Napoli are more or less the same in terms of the quality of chances that they created. Real setback for Fiorentina as well after, you know, going into Christmas with that big win over Juventus in Turin. They kind of haven't been able to kick on since then. Whereas Napoli, second time they've scored 6 goals this season. I think this was more impressive than the last time when they whooped a Genoa side that was completely decimated by probably the worst COVID outbreak that we've seen in Serie A so far this season. And they've got the small matter of the Super Cup coming up on Wednesday in Reggio Emilia against Juventus. And I think their confidence will be ever so slightly higher than that of the Bianconeri.
Huge game that. Yeah, I'd completely forgotten that was on, actually, the Super Cup. So that's taking place in Reggio Emilia.
Yes. It was supposed to take place in Saudi Arabia because of the agreement that they struck, which I think was between 3 and 5 years of playing it there. And then I think the Saudis came back to them and said, well, no one can come to this. I don't think they can have enough spectators in the stadium to make it worthwhile either. So instead, Serie A is having to stage it themselves at the Mappe Stadium, which used to be the kind of place where they would play the Trofeo Berlusconi or something like that. So,
an equally important competition. Excellent. Well, that'll be later. We'll hear shortly as well about last Friday's huge game in Rome, the derby between Lazio and Roma. And next up, though, let's hitch our wagons and head over to the Bundesliga.
RB Leipzig gift shop?
Yeah, I want to return a player. He's not working. He was supposed to help me achieve my goals, but I don't think he even knows what a goal is.
Ah, yeah. Well, all I can say is that he was just fine working when he was to London dispatched.
Oh.
Lampard and Chelsea can't seem to get their money back, but you can with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker. If one leg of your 4+-fold Acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Rafa, one of the delights of the Bundesliga is the extraordinary nomenclature that you have. The, what is it, Torkanonmeister? Torjägerkanon? No, Jäger. What do you call the top scorer?
The Jägermeister.
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 And what do you call, and you got a name for somebody who's halfway through the season on top?
That's the Hinrundenmeister.
Okay,
not to be confused with the Herbstmeister, or indeed the Weihnachtsmeister.
What are those then?
We have a word for any constellation possible, and this year, of course, is very different because the league doesn't work in line with the calendar. We're still in the first half of the season, even though it's January.
Right.
Usually, you finish before Christmas, and then you are the Autumnmeister.
Or in Bayern's case,
yeah, the Herbstmeister, exactly. Or in Bayern's case, it was the Christmas champion this year, and now they Weihnachtsmeister. And now they have been crowned Hinrundenmeister prematurely because there's still a game to go, but they cannot be caught having taken a 4-point lead ahead of Leipzig at the weekend.
The Hinrundenmeister, that Hinrund being the first half of the season.
Yeah, more or less, yes. More or less what you said.
not really. Because your Meister...
Right, okay. Interesting. And the Jägermeister? Jägermeister, that's the master of Jaguars?
No, Jäger is a huntsman.
Hunters, right.
Hence, it has the deer, the stag on the on the bottle, no?
Of course. Yeah. Anyway.
It's a giveaway.
Isn't there a maester in the Game of Thrones as well? Isn't there a maester?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
The grand maester.
Okay. So now, anyway, Bayern Munich, as you say, 4 points clear on the top now, which means they're going to be Hinrundenmeister and all those other things as well. And they opened up that lead with a 2-1 victory this weekend over Freiburg in the snow, Rafa, in the snow there in Bavaria. Goals from Thomas Müller and from Robert Lewandowski, who has now got 21 goals from 16 matches. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And every year we talk about the possibility of him catching Gerd Müller, whose 40-goal record has never been equaled or indeed surpassed from 71-72. But I think he might be able to do it. He's halfway there with 21 after only 16. And Bayern aren't even playing that well. They scored nice goals. They created chances. But then at the end, they were shaky and they were very lucky because Petersen, the goal scorer for Freiburg's first, very nearly got a second, hitting the bar in the 90th minute. So, yeah, still not everything okay in Munich. But of course, the kind of reaction, at least results-wise, that was absolutely necessary after their embarrassing cup defeat in midweek when they were knocked out by the second division Holstein Kiel on penalties.
Which was, of course, their second defeat in a row in all competitions and means they won't be retaining the treble. Their league chances, though, boosted by the fact that the other teams around them in the top four all dropped points. Leipzig missed the chance to go top of the table for the second Saturday in a row, getting held to a 2-2 draw away at Wolfsburg. Dortmund got held by bottom side Mainz. Mainz, in fact, scoring the goal of the weekend. And Bayer Leverkusen lost to Union Berlin 1-0, which means that Union Berlin are now fifth. Rafa, did you see this coming?
I don't think anyone did. I mean, Union Berlin staying in the league was a fairy tale of last season. This year, they look as if they're going one better or maybe two better. I mean, if they were to get into the Champions League, it'll be crazy. If they get into Europa League, it'll be just as sensational. Even a mid-table finish, you know, is in itself a huge result for them. And there's no reason that they can't keep this up because these games have not been, you know, freak results, going against the grain, being outperformed, but somehow finding ways to win. They actually tend to be the better teams, or at least equal in all of them. And to beat Leverkusen, a genuine Champions League contender, was another amazing result for Urs Fischer's side. So, but yes, the wider theme of the weekend was very much the question being answered, who is the new team that might actually take over from Bayern or might endanger Bayern's position? And the only answer is Bayern themselves, because everyone else has been falling by the wayside. And it felt like a pretty momentous and important game, especially in Dortmund, where they had a penalty shortly after scoring the equaliser. Marco Reus missed the goal altogether with his attempt. And the team that we all raved about last week when they beat Leipzig so convincingly are now once again 7 points adrift of Bayern, and it's probably going to be too much for them.
Mm. Before we move on, Rafa, let's get a quick check on Christian Gross and his Schalke. How did it go for them this time around?
It didn't go that well. They were really outplayed by Frankfurt. There was a time when Mafia Hoppe scored again, his fourth goal in two games.
Four shots as well, no?
Yeah, it was only 2-1 to Schalke at that point. But really, Frankfurt never looked like dropping those points. They were far superior. And in Luka Jovic, they had a striker who had an immediate impact. You know, they often say that players love to score against their former clubs. This was one of those occasions. Luckily for Eintracht, he was wearing their shirt as he did it. So that was a real nice way to come back. And immediately he looks much more like the confident, calm and very dangerous player that Frankfurt sold rather than one that Real Madrid got.
Mm. Is he kind of like, were Timo Werner to return to Leipzig? Do you think he'd suddenly kind of flourish again like a flower put back in water?
I mean, maybe there is something about strikers who tend to be more affected by a lack of confidence, a lack of game time, a lack of perhaps, you know, fitting into the team around them. I think it's more difficult if you have a few touches like these guys than to be in the game when things don't go for you. You're not one of those midfielders who will always, you know, be involved or a centre back that will always have an opportunity to go up against the strikers and you know, keep clean sheets and stuff. I think as a striker, you're a bit more exposed in that respect. And a lot of the Frankfurt officials and teammates making the point that he just seems to be happier playing for Frankfurt. It'll be interesting to see what happens at the end of the season. I don't think Frankfurt have an option to bring him back. I think the wages make it almost prohibitive to bring him back. Real Madrid are paying a significant part of it, but only until the summer. And then we'll have to see if he can turn it around and be given a second chance in Madrid.
Right, Ryan Clayton asking that question, how likely a full-time return to Germany for Luka Jovic might be, or whether Real will try and make it work for him. Alvaro, they've got some big questions to resolve, haven't they, Real Madrid? And notice that poll among fans in Madrid this week had them eager to clear out Eden Hazard. And, of course, there's Gareth Bale returning at the end of the season, unless Spurs decide that they'd like to keep him around.
Which I guess it is unlikely. Also, we have to say that Eden Hazard against Athletic Club Bilbao, he was a very peripheral figure, and not only because he was staying in the wing, but also because he didn't have any impact on the game. And yeah, I mean, you have to wonder why so many players don't succeed at Real Madrid, because, you know, it's been already 3 years since Real Madrid won their last European title, and they still rely pretty much on the same 7 or 8 key players at that time, and the newcomers, the likes of Hazard, even though I put an asterisk on top of his name because I do believe that injuries have killed his confidence. But, for example, what can you tell me about a guy like Luka Jovic or Mariano? I mean, Mariano in France, I mean, I'm not saying that he's literally Real Madrid material, but in France he scored over 20 goals for Olympique Lyon, so he is not such a bad player, and he's not getting quality time in Real Madrid. Luka Jovic, did he get enough chances at Real Madrid? I think that there was a lot of pressure on him from the beginning for his price tag, and also self-imposed pressure. I think that the player never looked confident at Real Madrid anytime he played. It didn't help the fact that sometimes he took a bit loosely the COVID restrictions when he went to Serbia in the middle of the pandemic. But of course, there are questions to ask over there. Why is a player like Jovic, a player like Mariano, a player like Martin Odegaard, for example, who were very good in Europa League type teams, and or Europa League level teams, and suddenly they go to Real Madrid and they don't raise their level? I think that questions have to be asked over there, because the recruitment at Real Madrid hasn't been very good. So far, in the last 3 years, they tried to sign the next players of the future rather than really good players like Ronaldo or Kaká in 2009, and that hasn't worked. So in terms of developing players, Real Madrid is making mistakes lately.
We'll get a little bit more transfer talk very, very shortly. But next up, let's hear from Julien Laurens.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hey, Jules.
Hey, James.
All right. Should you be working at the moment? Should you be, you know, coming out in solidarity with your colleagues at L'Équipe?
Yes, that's a good point, actually. I've reached out to some of them. They've been on strike now for more than a week because there's a social plan. Is that what you say in English? No, there's like a plan by the L'Équipe owners to reduce the team, the pages in the newspaper, and cut a few jobs and money and everything. So it's quite hard time for them. So we send them all our support.
Absolutely. So how long has that strike been going on for so far?
For more than a week. I think they started on, I think this is the 7th day or 8th day today.
Okay. Right. Yeah, well, best of luck to them in what are difficult times in the world, particularly of print journalism. In the meantime, it's been a better week for Paris Saint-Germain, who picked up a bit of silverware last week against Marseille in the Trophée des Champions. And this week went back on top of the table.
Yes, you're right. On Wednesday, they won the French Super Cup. We were talking about Bilbao and the Spanish Super Cup earlier. They beat Marseille, the arch rivals, in Lens 2-1. In a game where André Villas-Boas explained to us after the game that Marseille were the better side and they lost. Although he was the only one to think like that, because even his own players disagreed with him. But it was a good performance from Marseille. It was just that PSG were better. Icardi was in great form and scored and got a penalty as well that Neymar transformed. There was even more Neymar, Alvaro Gonzalez, Agro, do you remember, in the league, all the controversy. This time, there was no sending off, but there was a bit of trolling on social media after the game between Neymar and Alvaro, also on the pitch, which is good because they meet again on February the 7th in the league, this time in Marseille, the Velodrome. So you can expect, I think, a very hostile reception, even without fans there.
It's one win in seven games now for Marseille. What's gone on with AVB's team?
Yeah, I mean, I think for all the great work that he did there, I think recently some of his quotes or the things that he'd been saying, not just on Wednesday when he said, which was quite stupid, that his team deserved to win and they were the better team, which he knew they were not. But even before that, if you remember, in the Champions League, sometimes really publicly being harsh on his players. And I think just something is a bit broken there. They're also not very good going forward because too often Thauvin is on his own. Dimitri Payet, as we've said all season, has struggled with his weight and with his form in general. As we mentioned in the intro of the show, I mean, I've got no problem with... Listen, he's never been a big runner. He's not someone who covers a lot of ground and sprints a lot and work hard. And that's not what he does, because even on Saturday, he still had two great passes that created two big chances that Marseille should have scored. But I've got an issue. If he doesn't want to be there, if he doesn't want to play, he can just say it and he will be on the bench. The problem is when he's benched because he's not good enough at training, he moans and sulks. And when he's on the pitch, he doesn't fancy it and doesn't run and doesn't do anything like on Saturday. So I can understand the frustration from the Marseille fans. The president was certainly very unhappy after the game, and he had a go at the players, and they play again on Tuesday in the one of the games in hand against Lens. So that's going to be a huge game for them. They really have to win that one because their form has been poor.
They're looking to bolster their chances up front, at least with the signing of Arkadiusz Milik from Napoli. I'm not sure how close that one is to going through, and how much do you think that will help, James?
Well, I think as long as Milik's fit, and let's face it, he hasn't had any competitive football now for a considerable amount of time, hasn't been part of Napoli's squad this season. They expected him to either sign a new contract or to move on. That whole saga has dragged on really for a year now, because it's one of the reasons why they signed Andrea Petagna as his replacement, because they expected that he would have been off already for a knockdown price a year ago. I think he'll be very good. I think as long as Milik's knees are intact, he's one of the best strikers, certainly as one of the best strikers in Serie A, and he's really kind of silky player as well, can really link the play nicely. I'm kind of surprised, actually, that I think Marseille have been really persistent in pushing for this signing to happen. Some of the other teams, like Atletico, I think were put off by the asking price for someone who's only, 4 months now away from being available for free. But yeah, Marseille certainly have kept coming back for him to the point where I think with Milik, whereas he was maybe once thinking, actually, I'll hang around and wait until the summer and just not play any football at all. I think because Marseille keep knocking at his door, he may well end up at the Velodrome.
They're certainly offering him a lot of money in wages, I mean.
Yes.
You know, they had that problem before with Strootman, who they just loaned back to Italy to Genoa, but his wages were enormous. And there was a point where they said, well, we can't really afford for what he does, how much we pay him. It's just not viable. And I just hope for them that Milik won't be another Strootman and that actually would have a much better impact and certainly sort of repay a bit what they're clearly ready to invest on.
In this weekend's results, Paris Saint-Germain won 1-0 away at Angers, although Maurizio Pochettino was not there to see it because he's isolating after testing positive for COVID-19. Goal scored by Levan Kurzawa.
The shame for Pochettino, Jimbo, is that, COVID obviously is, you know, it's unfortunate for anyone and he's okay and stuff. But because PSG don't play midweek this week, he would have had the whole week to be able to work a bit with the players, you know, and, I don't know, put things together, insist on certain aspects of what he wants them to do. And he, now he will have to stay home the whole week, which is a real shame. We saw one of his assistants on Saturday in the game having his headphones and being on the phone literally the whole game with Pochettino. You can imagine him watching on television and giving them instructions on what to do and everything. In the end, they won. It was not pretty. They played him pretty bad. And Angers probably deserved to win or at least to get a point. But they would just be happy with the win and like we said, going back top of the table.
Okay. Lyon, who were on top, lost 1-0 at home to Metz after a run of 16 games without defeat. Monaco moves up to fourth with a 3-2 win at Montpellier with another goal from Kevin Volland. And as we mentioned, Marseille tumbled at home to Nîmes. Raymond Domenech's career as Nantes manager saw him pick up a third draw in three games this weekend.
That's right, but he said he saw a lot of good things, which I didn't see, to be fair, personally. Mm. But, you know, if he did, that's the most important. And next week, we've got two huge derbies in Saint-Étienne-Lyon, which is very important for Lyon, as you said, because they lost this weekend, and also Monaco-Marseille.
Ooh.
And the Monaco fans, all millions of them around the world, would love nothing more than, obviously, pile more pressure and more misery on Marseille's poor current run.
Okay. Let's have some more transfer news. Here's Tom Baldwin asking if Dele Alli does make the move to Paris Saint-Germain, how's he going to fit into their side? Poch obviously loves him, says Tom, but Verratti's playing well in the 10 role now that they've changed their system. Jules.
Yeah, I mean, Verratti didn't play in the number 10 role on Saturday. This time he went back to his more normal sort of number 8 role alongside Paredes in the 4-2-3-1. Neymar played number 10, didn't really play well there, to be fair. And Kylian Mbappe played on the left and Di Maria on the right and Moise Kean up front. So there could be room for Dele Alli there in that sort of central number 10 position behind the striker, whoever plays the striker. I'm still being told that right now there's just not much going on there. So I don't know, maybe PSG are waiting a bit. Maybe Spurs don't want to sell, which, again, that's why I was told before too, because of all the games that will have to be played in the second half of the season. So we'll have to see. I just think that Pochettino would really like Marco Verratti to play higher up on the pitch because he thinks that there's something there. And then you can also be a bit more solid defensively because if you replace Verratti, for example, by Ganagay, him and Paredes defensively are much stronger than Verratti and Paredes or Verratti and Gay. So I think it might be interesting to follow. And certainly if Pochettino thinks that Verratti has that position as a number 10, there's no room there for Dele Alli.
I see. That all makes sense. Meanwhile, Alvaro, any update on West Ham's bid for Sevilla striker Youssef El-Naziri?
Well, so far, the only thing we do know is the Athletic's information saying that they have done an offer for the player and Sevilla so far hasn't rejected it. The information was a little bit shocking for some journalists in Sevilla because they weren't expecting that. And the truth is that I think that Sevilla would be happy to sell, probably, if the offer is increased a little bit more because El-Naziri is the main number 9 at Sevilla at the minute, but that is down to the fact that De Jong has been playing really badly. But will in Serie B that striker that Sevilla needs for the next years? That's still to be confirmed. So if the offer gets better, probably Sevilla will consider it and accept it. A little bit like with Jules Koundé, when the Manchester City offered something in the region of 60 million and Sevilla wanted a bit more for that.
Mm, fair enough then. Dan, stay indoors, wants to talk about the B word. Says Dan, perhaps it's difficult to tell given the paucity of transfers due to the pandemic, but is Brexit starting to have a major impact on EU to UK transfers and vice versa? The other question which Dan doesn't ask, which is surely implicit, is are footballers happy when they're on British soil? Are they happier when they're British football players?
It doesn't really work with a fish thing, I think, James. To answer the second half of the question, it makes no difference to EU clubs because they can still buy, well, let's put it this way. It depends what the national regulations are for non-EU foreigners. But in many of the big leagues, they are pretty relaxed. So the fact that you are now no longer an EU player and British doesn't really count against you in places like Germany, for example.
But what about going the other way from European Union to the UK?
That has become more complicated, of course. You need to now jump through the hoops and tick a lot of boxes to be either recognised international, or your transfer fee has to be a certain value. So if you are buying just your sort of average, interesting, but not yet fully fledged 19, 20-year-old, it is a problem and it's much, much more difficult. So it's difficult to, you know, to say the impact is there because we can't see it so much. I mean, transfers that don't happen don't tend to, you know, get reported. But I'm sure if you look at some of the frustrations voiced by Sam Allardyce, ironically enough, it has become more difficult.
Right. Okay. That picture will no doubt become clearer as the whole ongoing Brexit fallout continues. Now, in other news from European football, very shortly we'll touch on the potential for another Barcelona disaster this Thursday against upset specialist Cornea in the Copa del Rey. We'll also be hearing about last Friday's huge result down in Rome as Lazio beat Roma 3-0.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Primo pallone per il Franco Ivoriano, interessante, Luis Alberto al limite. Luis Alberto, la piazza, 3-0! E doppietta di Luis Alberto, gol strepitoso da parte del mago spagnolo.
Drama there at the Stadio Olimpico last Friday. Lazio 3, Roma a big fat 0. Crikey, this was total domination by the Biancocelesti, James Horncastle.
I mean, aside from the first 5 minutes, so one-sided, it was untrue. I think Simone Inzaghi won this game a couple of years ago, 3-0, and that was the biggest scoreline winning margin that Lazio had in the derby, matched their best ever win, and he's gone and done it again. The last time around, it kind of precipitated the dismissal of Eusebio Di Francesco. I don't think that's going to happen with Paolo Fonseca. Roma had been in very good form. Just a week beforehand, they'd drawn 2-2 with Inter. And I think one of the things that was disappointing about this performance wasn't only that they just gifted two goals The Lazio very early, couple of mistakes from Roger Ibanez, who's been brilliant since joining from Atalanta this time last year. But the fact that there was very little fight, they never really looked like getting back into the game at all. It was all Lazio. And I think it's one of the reasons why Simone Inzaghi is held in such high esteem. They're through to the round of 16 of the Champions League after qualifying for that competition for the first time in 13 years. He's won the Italian Super Cup a couple of times. He's won the Coppa Italia, really on a small budget and with a group of no-name guys. And Manuel Lazzari in this game was fantastic. And I think as we were saying about Conte and the Derby d'Italia kind of having a few days to study Juventus, I think it helped Inzaghi and Lazio that they had kind of 5 days to prepare for this game. They were fresh. They didn't have any cup games in midweek, nor did Roma. And I think they put that time to better use. And real kind of dent in Roma's confidence, because I think one of the reasons why they've done so well and looked like being a title contender this year is because they've done a better job than the other top six sides at basically mopping up anyone else, games against teams below them. It's really in games like this where Fonseca, for the most part, has struggled in the last 18 months to meet expectation at Roma.
Well, this is very much the point that the Gazzetta was making on Saturday, that for all that they did pick up a point against Inter, it has been against the big six, as it were, the big clubs in Italy, that his teams have consistently, or his Roma side has consistently, come up short. And one or two ominous noises of changes being made if this doesn't improve between now and the end of the season. They have made steps to increase the kind of Portuguese quotient of their kind of management structure, Roma. So it'd be surprising to see him leave. But then again, you've got new ownership at the club, so I guess everything's on the table.
Well, from what I can gather, new ownership was very impressed with Fonseca when they took over the club. At the time, I think some other people, existing management, saw an opportunity in the takeover to maybe recommend that they make a change of coach. And instead, once the Friedkins met Fonseca, they were like, no, actually, we really like this guy. We think he's progressing the team in the right direction. Thiago Pinto, the new general manager who comes in from Benfica, Fonseca was unaware. I don't think he was brought in to the talks that behind the choice of new sporting director. But certainly, I think that has the potential to reinforce his position. So far, I think Roma remain on schedule. They want to be back in the Champions League next year, and if they get there, then I think it will be pretty difficult for the Friedkins to turn around and say, right, we're going to go in another direction now. So, but as you say, James, they need to get wins in these games against the top six, because they have put in the occasional good performance. I mentioned the Inter draw. They should have beaten Juventus earlier in the season when they had a man advantage for half an hour, and somehow they conceded an equaliser when Juventus were down to 10 men through Cristiano Ronaldo. They dominated the first hour of that game and should have been home and dry even before Rabiot got sent off. So, it's not as though they haven't performed in these big games. It's just that they haven't got results. But certainly the 3-0 defeat to Lazio was the worst performance from Roma this season.
Indeed. All right, Andrew H. wants to know, is Giampaolo's job at Torino under threat yet?
Oh, it's about time, isn't it? I mean, he's got the sack. Davide Gone. Nicola has come in. Nicola, who is from Piedmont, he played for Torino as well when he kept Crotone up in probably the greatest of great escapes a few years ago. He vowed that he would cycle all the way from Crotone in Calabria to Piedmont, which is essentially a tour of Italy, a Giro d'Italia.
1,300 kilometres he rode on his bicycle.
And then he kept Genoa up last year
that
as
was
well.
Even, so. For me, that was maybe even more, I don't know, they were bottom of the table when he took over from Thiago Motta, and he kept them up. Yeah. And of course, being Genoa, they fired him as a result. Do you think that Torino might hang on to him a bit longer?
I think so, because in some ways it's a little bit of a surprise that Giampaolo has lasted so long, because they haven't won at home at all this season. It's now 6 months since they last picked up a win. I was going to say in front of their own fans, but of course they haven't played in front of them since the beginning of the pandemic. It's really odd what's happened to this Torino team, because at the beginning of last season they were in the preliminaries for the Europa League. They got knocked out in the playoff by Wolves. They were coming off a really good season under Mazzarri. They've got better players than their place in the table suggests. You know, Belotti keeps scoring lots and lots of goals in a bad team. Simone Zaza has never really managed to be the same player after missing that penalty against Germany at Euro 2016. They've got really good defenders at Torino. I mean, Sirigu has had a bit of a down year this time around, but still in the Italy setup. Then you've got Brema, Lianco, Izzo. You know, particularly those two Brazilians are well thought of and will probably get a move to one of the big Italian clubs in the summer. Singo's been a really good find as well at wing-back. Clearly, I think Gianpaolo signed his own P45 on Saturday night when he couldn't beat newly promoted Spezia, despite having a man advantage for 87 minutes of that game. They drew 0-0, and then he came out and basically said, look, this team just can't play my style of football. So they went, right then, okay. Thank you very much. Ciao.
Torino currently in the bottom three of the Italian First Division, alongside Crotone and Parma, who picked up a point on De Zerbi's first game back at home to Sassuolo. All right, very good. Let's finish off today with a quick word on the cup action on the way in Spain. Barcelona trying to bounce back from their Super Cup disappointment and taking on the very same team, Cornea, who put Atletico Madrid out in the previous round. Alvaro, interesting bunch, Cornea. They're from just down the road from Barcelona. Well, from the Camp Nou.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that against Atletico de Madrid, actually, they deserve to go through. So obviously, if Barcelona is not going to take this game seriously, or if they are going to play, you know, at the 50% of their capacities, then they will suffer. And to be honest with you, I think that the upsets are happening a lot in the Spanish Cup. So no team should sleep and not playing every game with a certain level of concentration. In the previous round, clubs like Alavés, Cádiz, Elche, Eibar, they have been ousted out by a minor category opposition. So I think that Barcelona, this time, they will have to take it seriously, because last season almost they got knocked out against Ibiza as well in the Copa del Rey. So why not this season? And I was thinking before that, you know, this is a little bit aside, but it's a big picture comment. I think that last decade in Spain started with Barcelona and Real Madrid being magnificent. They won their first six domestic titles in the decade, from 2011 to 2012. And this season, however, they look vulnerable, to the point that the club that has won the Super Cup is Athletic Club Bilbao. The club who is topping La Liga table is Atlético de Madrid. So it's a little bit of a new era, and I think that you are very right by making us pay attention to games like Barcelona, Cornellà, or even Real Madrid, Alcoyano, because yes, the big Spanish teams, they are favorites for these games, but in the past, there were barely upsets in this cup round, and now it looks like an upset is something more likely than definitely 10 years ago.
Mm. In the meantime, your club, Athletic, are off to Ibiza, which would be nice. Well, we'll bring you a roundup of the cup news, such as it is next week in the next Tuesday's Totally Football Show European edition. Before we wrap up for today, Alvaro, something else you want to add?
Yeah, very quickly. Number one, FIFA has confirmed the 10-game ban for Trippier for breaching FA's betting rules. And number two, the elections at Barcelona have been postponed probably until March. So if anyone was expecting Barcelona to sign players in January, that possibility has been pretty much crushed now, because the interim president, I don't think that he's in the position to sign any player now.
Can I just ask, Alvaro, if that has an impact on Wijnaldum as well? I mean, he was never going to go in January, but if he wants to go to Barcelona next season, now would have been the time to negotiate and accept, and that's going to be delayed as well now?
It's going to be delayed, obviously, yes. I think that if Wijnaldum was never going to leave at this stage of the season, as you said, so I think that it wouldn't have such an impact on his potential signing, because Barcelona will have a president, hopefully, by mid-March, and you know, I think that there will be still some margin to talk to the player if they are really interested in him. But definitely this is affecting Eric García's signing, because that was an operation that was set to happen in January.
And Rafa, anything you'd like to flag up?
I think it's just worth mentioning, James, that there was an alleged racist incident in a game between Union and Leverkusen. Nadim Amiri allegedly being insulted because of his background from Afghanistan. That's where his family hails from. We have to say that the player in question has apologized for insulting him, but has denied that there was any racism involved. And Amiri has accepted his apology, deleted a statement on Instagram from his brother that was blaming Florian Hübner, the Union player. And now this is all under investigation. But for more info and details, just tune in to the Stahlcast pod with me and Christoph Biermann.
An excellent idea. All right. Very good. Many thanks then to everybody for all those wonderful stories and the less wonderful ones from the wide world of European football. We're back next Tuesday. Have yourselves a great week in the meantime, and we'll catch up with you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.